Welcome to Micro College. My name is Jacob Hunt. I'm the director of Thoreau College. And we are very excited to have as a guest today Ezra Sullivan, who's part of the Threefold Educational Foundation and School in Chestnut Ridge, New York. Before we get to Ezra, though, just some notes about the podcast and about Thoreau College. We're speaking to you here in early summer of 2025. Thoreau College right now is accepting applications for our fall semester program. Fall 2025, which starts in late August, the Metamorphosis Gap semester. And we'll be opening up applications soon also for the spring Metamorphosis Gap semester. New this year, we're very excited to announce that Thoreau College programs are available to receive college credits through a partnership with Prescott College in Arizona. So that's new and very exciting for us. So if you're interested in any of this or the work of the Driftless Folk School, the Viroqua Shakespeare Festival, and other projects, please check us out on the web at thoreaucollege.org. Very excited to have as our guest Ezra Sullivan, a person we've been speaking to off and on over the last number of years. It was a while ago that you first reached out, Ezra. You were very few different lives before. But also, yeah. Your biography, which I'll share in a second, is it connects several other things that we've explored on the podcast. Born in Los Angeles, Ezra Sullivan moved to South America after high school to initiate an inquiry into the life and being of man and nature with meditation and agriculture. In Latin America, Rudolf Steiner's ideas quickly reached Ezra through the biodynamic work. Upon returning to the United States 3 years later, Ezra oriented his spiritual life towards anthroposophy. The following 9 years were focused mainly in the Pacific Northwest on regenerative biodynamic agriculture, nonprofit leadership, and the intentional communities movement, and nonviolent activism. In 2022, Ezra studied at the Goetheanum in Switzerland. His focus now lies primarily in the social realm, including adult engagement in anthroposophy and renewing organizations. In 2024, Ezra moved to the Threefold community in upstate New York, where he now is part of the Threefold Educational Foundation and School and is launching a new a year-long program called Beginning Anthroposophy. Thank you so much for joining us, Ezra.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And congratulations on the accreditation. I mean, that's a huge step. So
Yeah, thank you. It's we are in our 10th year of working on Thoreau College, and yeah, it feels, it's like a real affirmation of some of the work that we've been doing. So
beautiful.
Yeah, congratulations on launching your new program there. You've shared some of your biography briefly here, but maybe you could take us back to those years when you are when you were 18, 19, 20 years old, and you describe here so heading out on a pretty big quest. And so maybe what were you engaging with that time? What was important to you? Who were the people who were influential in your life as a late teen, early young adult?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate the question. And it's actually been funny. I've been doing some presentations about the work of the youth section, which I'm involved with at high schools. And a part of that, I've been giving some of my bio of these years, to kind of talk to them about from the other side about what they're heading into. And when I tell them about my 18 to 21, I'm like, I kind of look out of my peripherals at the teachers and I'm like, oh, this might not be what they want these students to hear. It's quite unconventional, but anyway, yeah. So for me, I mean, to preload it a little bit by talking about my high school years, I was very un, you know, just kind of intuitively uninspired. I went to public school in Los Angeles, and I, some kind of thought in the heart, I just said, oh, this can't lead me towards where I need to go. These people in these systems, I could tell that there was something weighing on them and that it wouldn't be a clear path for me. And it was just very intuitive. But for me, study had always been so important, self-study, really by myself, and with books and literature. So I kind of had that intuitive knowing, and then through high school, the one kind of, other than my self-study, the one kind of love relationship with learning that I developed was through martial arts. And became just completely fascinated with that. Unfortunately, not like a philosophical martial art or anything, like any it was kind of just like kickboxing. But still, there's kind of all these kind of implicit, kind of beautiful or deeply philosophical spiritual aspects of that, that happened. So So when I was 18, I kind of knew I had this love of learning through actually physicality. And I wasn't interested in competition in martial arts ever, or really in any sports. But there was something about working with the body, working with the hands that I intuitively was drawn towards. And always in my childhood, my mother just has a great love of cooking. And so I kind of was looking at being a chef or working with food in some way. So when I was 18, I just decided to not go to college. In a way, I kind of just found myself in high school not applying myself to academics to the level in which one would get into college. Kind of how it happened. It wasn't necessarily conscious at that age. And I moved to, so yeah, after high school, I moved to Brazil. And I was thinking to follow through with Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is something I had been studying for some years, which I never ended up doing. But I went to Brazil and I just found myself, excuse me, I found myself on a meditation retreat center and farm on the first day in rural Brazil, and coming out of the meditation in the morning, and the kind of, it was like an interfaith temple, mostly Buddhist, but quite interfaith. And I just came out of that meditation hall in the morning and sat on the deck, and for the first time, I had a thought that I decided to put my will totally behind. You know, that was about my future. And it was just really like, oh, I want to do this, and this is what I'm going to do. And it was so difficult through my childhood to find something that I really wanted to put myself into. But it was right there, and I kind of say it in that bio, it was right there with meditation as a path of kind of self-development or self-knowledge or spiritual path through meditation. And then, you know, the other side was really this work in agriculture, which really at that time, I mean, I didn't know what agriculture was. Or, you know, even rural living. I grew up in Los Angeles in the inner city. So, but there was something really, what was calling me was an interest in understanding nature. And by nature, I don't mean like shrubs and like, you know, goats or whatever, but more in like that philosophical sense of the world of the senses. And I was really like, oh, I could do this, and then agriculture could be a way to sustain myself in this kind of inner inquiry process. So that was a moment. And then I ended up staying in South America for 3 years, farming, doing Buddhist meditation retreats. And I was on one farm for about over half that time in Argentina, where I really kind of dedicated myself. And it was really kind of trying to go to the root of indigenous spirituality, agriculture, kind of following even just different plants and going to where their origin was, you know, really investigating the potato and the people of that, and corn, and kind of following the Andes, and just going with what was presented to me. I think that's a pretty good explanation. I guess that time rounded off with, at 21 years old, me pretty much feeling like I needed to go home. You know, which I had really, in kind of my, you know, strong early adulthood, I was like, I'm never going back, you know. But at 21, there was a real something of being kind of back in my place and with my people, and no longer being an outsider to the degree of which I was. That really kind of struck deeply within me, and I came home, and then kind of found agriculture, found spirituality in a totally different way. Because, well, first of all, I was all of a sudden with all these resources, like a car, you know. I had volition to go places. And, you know, could buy books, and so it was an interest. I mean, not that you can't kind of buy books in South America, but it's just an easier process. And I was fluent in Spanish, but I didn't, you know, read, you know, deep philosophy in Spanish or spirituality much. So it was kind of somewhat limited. And even just like, there's something about being, for me, being in my own country where I can navigate processes with bureaucracies a little bit better. And so
Yeah.
that'll round off with that.
Well, so when you that turn towards home, right, in your early 20s, right, that's an interesting kind of feature of this. Like we hear stories I've been asking now for 3 years this question, and like the foreign quest off into South America is a really important part of that story for many people, and it's a classic kind of hero's journey, kind of a trope there, and then the return home is significant and complicated, right? And so when you thought about home, was that Los Angeles, or was that North America, or was that the United States? Like what was where were you called to?
Yeah, it was definitely the West Coast, not home, because home, at that point I was in this thing. I mean, I would really say 18 to 30 was like home. What was happening in Los Angeles is a bad thing. Because of my kind of rural kind of agrarian and all the idealism that goes along with that and the romance of it. And so no, for me very much LA was a landing point. And then I went to Northern California and then Southern Oregon and I
Love
lived
the
in the
coast.
Midwest, yeah, for 9 years.
I think that when I spoke with you, when you reached out to me first, you were in on the Olympic Peninsula in Washington. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, so I came back and I mean, one thing that I just want to highlight for others is that kind of coming back from the hero's journey can kind of, providentially or conspicuously aligned with other things. So I remember, I don't know, I don't often say this, but I just feel called to say that, like, me coming back also aligned with some like deep difficulties that happened irrespective of me and my family. And then I was like, oh, now I got to come back, and there's like a mental health crisis my family's going, a member of my family's going through. Without kind
Well,
of
I would
doing
say,
that.
yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned that because that is, I think, often the case, right? You know, that return phase of the journey is that's a hard moment, right? Can you integrate what you've learned and this the new self that you are back to the familiar world, your family, your country, your community, or you know, whatever version of that you return to, like there are things there that are waiting for you to for the new you to engage with
Yeah.
your new insights, perhaps. But
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
it's
Yeah,
hard.
but yeah, no, it was challenging, but I mean, for one, it's like we're given what we can't handle so that we can develop the capacity to handle it. And yeah, and we are, and I did feel prepared for it in a certain way. But no, I would say, for me, when I came back, I got a, job on an organic farm. And although it was a beautiful experience, beautiful people, I was definitely like, oh, this is totally not what I thought organic farming was, or like the kind of what we were working towards and the kind of anti-industrialization or whatever of farming. Because there was a certain, in South America, and I was living in the village, I mean, there's a certain soulfulness and the kind of passed down tradition ways. Then I was on this farm, and then I was like, oh, this is not actually what I thought I was really seeking. And then that's how I got into, I had already heard about biodynamics. I heard about biodynamics and anthroposophy right away, actually, when I was 18 in
South
Argentina.
America? Yeah.
Yeah, in Argentina. Yeah. So someone, it was actually a beautiful little experience. Someone gave me the biodynamic planting calendar, and I was coming out of a 12-day silent Buddhist, meditation retreat. And it was so difficult because, these two things came in of meditation and then understanding nature. And there's some conflict sometimes between those two, this kind of inner path and this outer path. And for me, and this isn't true of Zen Buddhism, but like the people I was connected to and the monasteries that I was visiting were very much like there was nothing going on of any practicalities, like I think the only kind of like work I did when living at the monastery was like raking the Zen garden. Like there was no, and I know some monasteries are doing their own farming and are doing lots of projects, but so very much I was having this experience of like, oh, to follow my spiritual path, I move away from the day, like our daily bread or our work in the world. And then when I was in agriculture, it was like it was there implicitly, not explicitly always, but so it was kind of an interesting dance. And then when I saw the biodynamic calendar, even though that didn't actually ended up being a hugely important aspect of biodynamics for me, working with the kind of celestial rhythms in terms of how we do our tasks on the farm. I just, to connect those two though, connect my daily task with a like grandiose cosmic planetary rhythm and say that those two are in interaction and that I can work on one level and be working on the other was huge. I actually remember like laughing, just laughing because I was not at it, but just with it. Like, wow. Could you imagine? This is someone thought of this. This is amazing. So that was a big connection for me.
Yeah, that's striking from the story you told and in the biography, meditation and agriculture, right? The very inward and the very practical embodied, right? And as well as martial arts, right? Those are polarities that certainly we see in the students, not a polarity, but they're two features, distinctive kind of features that we students here at Thoreau College come often feeling disconnected from both, right? Something about our modern life doesn't allow one to go truly inward, but also like just disconnected from the body in a way. And so, the vision of education that I think we're both working on is one that is also engaging with those maybe neglected elements of the self as well. And then the third element that comes up in your biography here is community. So intentional communities, renewing organizations. So how did that thread enter your interests and how what experiences have you had with that realm?
Yeah, thanks. So there right away, after that first year farming back in Oregon, I joined an intentional community and I became the farmer. And so then I ended up living at a few different intentional communities. Also in South America, I lived at a couple intentional communities or unintentional communities as well, which are also good. I think really I was looking for life, in a certain way, and I was looking for an alternative or new relationship to economics, and kind of living together beyond a nuclear family model, where, what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, but how do we share with each other and so that what's mine is yours. So that was kind of an interest of mine, and also there's a lot of opportunities, I have to say, in intentional communities. Like kind of anything intentional often runs in, or like anything intentional and trying to be new often runs into a kind of a lot of difficulties. And so like, there's often, especially for farming, there's a lot of opportunities there for land stewardship if you're looking for access to land. There's a lot of really great intentioned people with land who are seeking people to steward it. And that was really, part of my angle at the time was I really wanted to, the there's a certain point in the learning, right, where the best next step for learning is teaching. And I wasn't teaching, right, but I was operating the farm myself. Like I wanted me to be the feedback loop where I could really learn. I wasn't waiting on anyone else where I'm running this field and, this garden and these pigs and these ducks or whatever the different enterprises were, depending on the land base. So I kind of worked through intentional communities for some years, and also for me that was part of this reintegration process from South America back to North America, is like experimenting with these different forms and also looking at our role with like luxury and principled nonviolence in that sense was a really big aspect for me. 'Cause you can imagine, I was living, sometimes there would just be a light bulb, or like we put up the tower for the satellite, and we got the internet and the one computer, kind of thing. But all kinds of different situations, which were out of circumstance, not idealism. But then when I came back, I did feel as a really huge lack of resonance between the way that we were living in our kind of bougie alternative lifestyle on the West Coast, and then the way that I had lived in South America, and I felt that they were in direct relation to each other. Like we're living this way because they're living that way. And it just felt so such an injustice to me. And so that was part of I moved to some principled nonviolence intentional communities where we were kind of living Amish style, kind of out of respect or deference to that, or activism towards that.
Meaning like no electricity, meaning horse
Yeah.
or that kind of
Yeah,
stuff.
cutting firewood by hand, crosscut saws, cutting firewood. And all that kind of stuff, working with horses. And that was a really interesting experience because sometime, what I realized a little bit was some of the intentional communities that I lived in, where we were kind of not as necessarily nonviolent in our lifestyle, there was actually let there was a lot of nonviolence between us, like between human beings in our social dynamics. And then when I'd go to these activist communities, there was like no, there was less violence in terms of my relationship to technology and, the kind of physical world, but in like the heart space between people, there was a lot of violence. It's like an interesting, in subtle kind of ways.
Say more. What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, kind of like, when you're kind of living as an example of something and on this mission, sometimes you kind of look so much at what you're developing that these softer things between you and I become not as important. And a whole culture of judgment, or like I was living in places where it's like some people were, they would use cars sometimes, some people they would never use cars, some people would, all these kind of different levels of, so it became a whole head trip. And it was really interesting because it actually made me look deeply at my theory of change. And ultimately, I did feel like there was something to do with directly with consciousness. Directly working with consciousness as the foundational kind of prima materia, rather than kind of, okay, I'm not going to use a plastic bucket today, or whatever the kind of situation you want to focus on. And I kind of went through that with a lot of different things, like with, diet and all, and right livelihood and all these different aspects. And that I guess it's a bit of that early adulthood of, or maybe it's not strictly confined to then, but for me, of kind of finding a middle path between extremes and polarity of lifestyle, kind of testing things. So that's when that brought me to working for a nonprofit, which I was the co-director of Sunfield Biodynamic Farm and Waldorf School. In Washington State. That's when you and I first got in contact. That's like a 100-acre biodynamic farm with a Waldorf school on it. And really that also coincided with me. I since, 2014, I mean, so by that time, maybe 3 or 4 years, Anthroposophy had really become the center of my spiritual inquiry and interest. And when I found it, I mean, I found it with that story I told you, biodynamics, but then when I really found Anthroposophy, which is, a lot of the kind of philosophical and spiritual esoteric underpinnings behind these different initiatives of Waldorf or biodynamics, et cetera, I just deeply knew that I had found what I had been looking for, because I had kind of gone through a lot of different paths and not found what I needed personally. Not that they don't offer what people need, but so it had become such a center point of my life and my study and my spiritual practice that at that point it made sense to make it also my outer life in some way. And so yeah, so I joined this nonprofit as the farmer, and I was there for 5 years.
Yeah, so a leadership role, right? In a small community there, in a way. So I think as we turn to where you are now and the more recent experiences, I think it is worthwhile to stop for a moment. I mean, the new the program that you're launching this year at Threefold Community there is called Beginning Anthroposophy. Our listeners here to the podcast are very eclectic. There's a lot of different strands that lead people here, and so folks who are interested in this, there are lots of other conversations that address this. But especially for you who are you're starting you're designing a program that is really for beginning anthroposophy. What would you say to someone who says, "What's that? What's anthroposophy?" Because
Absolutely.
hard as it is, that's a question that I'm sure you're asked.
No, that's a great question. Yeah, I mean, so usually the best place to start is just to say, break the word down in terms of anthro and sophia. And so some people say human wisdom, but and that's true. And there's also a certain kind of masculine aspect to anthro and a feminine aspect to Sophia, although I think if you go back farther, they do become not in that polarity in that conversation. For me, this aspect of human wisdom is really, well, when I'm talking about human, I'm not talking about kind of this reflected image of you and I, but I'm actually talking about the highest spiritual principle of the human being, which is an individuality, which is a paradoxically or imponderably kind of connected with everything, yet is actually its own unique, individuality and substance. And so there's this idea of connecting that spiritual principle, something that is immortal, eternal, has duration, connecting that with this kind of divine feminine or the Sophia, or this wisdom, which is really for me is the soul. So it's actually the capacities that I've been given in this incarnation, and like actually not just the capacities, but the incorruptible aspect of the human soul. And so how do you marry these two? And this is, of course, what esotericism, is, alchemy is the marrying of these two polarities to kind of create a third principle. So that's what I would say anthroposophy is. Oftentimes people speak of it as a path of knowledge, which is a bit of a problem. I mean, I think maybe more we could talk about knowing, because knowledge is kind of already fallen in a certain sense, and we're actually not going for anything that's already been given. We're actually seeking to cultivate our capacity to give meaning, to give, to treat the world as unfinished, to actually be co-creative with the world, with reality, with the human being, with the evolution of consciousness, and kind of take that on as an essential task of the human being. So it's really about the knowing. It's actually a, so we talk about living thinking or a precognitive actually activity before it's kind of fallen into a thought, but to actually be in the stream of living creation or the word or yeah.
And knowing as an activity, right? It's an important kind of distinction to make. I mean, I would reflect. I think that your story, the paths that led you to here, this moment, are a great illustration of this, right? Like, this is not the path of like a scholar, right? You've not gone to the library for a decade, and I'm sure you've read a bunch of books, but like, you've been having your hands in the soil, you've been living in community, you've been, working as a teacher, right? These are activities, they're very active engagements with the world that are, and that's, I think, one of the distinctive things for me about anthroposophy, is that it is engaged with the world in a very active way, creatively, productively, in service to the world and people, and yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And that's kind of been an interesting thing is that I'm creating it. So I've created this course. So we're just finishing our first year and then we'll start again in the fall. And this is a foundation year in anthroposophy, but just very part-time. It's just Saturdays over 9 months, 14 Saturdays. And this is really for people in our region and all ages to come and just get their first understanding. It's really a broad brushstroke of everything. But the other program that I'm creating this fall, which might be more applicable to the kind of micro college movement, is this thing that I'm actually, it's had many names as we've been birthing it. So, but right now we've named it as the Youth Collab. And that
Okay.
is like a residency program. So what we're doing is we've taken over this house, which we're calling now the Youth House, and it'll be the home to many things. It'll be the home to this part-time course beginning anthroposophy, but it'll also be home to this residency program called the Youth Collab. And that's really, as you can imagine, is a co-working space. And it was interesting because when I was thinking of what to do, a course like a 9 month full-time residential course was kind of the more first thing I thought of, or maybe obvious, but then I started to look at who I was. And a 9 month course is actually a beautiful thing, and I encourage others to do so, but it's so good to have this different palette, because for me I have almost zero like full-time education, adult education experience. It's really been a path of self-study and just like hours by myself after a long day of farming. So I was thinking, well, it's actually, if I look at myself about what I should offer and what be an interesting thing in the palette of off personally, it was a bit of a setting in the same way. when I was in my early 20s. I actually really wanted to be in the doing and also in the co-working and finding my colleagues. And of course, you can find this in a course, but what I was really interested in is creating more of a residency program. And also just dealing with people, how people are right now with kind of commitments and time. Like just a people come on a rolling basis for whatever individual commitment they need. And we're starting this at the end of the year in the fall. So the idea is it has kind of three pillars: study, initiative, and service. And I want people to be doing things, but I also I for me, just study has been so important, and it's going to be really, based really in anthroposophy. So people who are really looking for a modern path of initiation through meditation, studying epistemological texts, aspects like this. There's a lot of great kind of like you're saying, like eclectic kind of offerings and all over the place. And I really love those offerings and they're perfect. But I really wanted to offer something for someone who wants to go deeply into the work of Rudolf Steiner and kind of this path.
Yeah. Before you say more, let's contextualize this. I mean, the location where you're set there. First of all, if people are curious about the setting, if you look back through the catalog of the Micro College Podcast, episode 58, last summer, summer 2024, we interviewed Megan Durney and Kim Vaughn, who are part of the Threefold Community Farm, who are working to teach future biodynamic farmers and working with draft animals and that sort of thing in the same little community here. This is Chestnut Ridge area outside of New York City, not too far. But this is one of the oldest centers of biodynamics and of anthroposophy and Waldorf education in North America. So you want to just say a little bit about your setting there?
No, I appreciate that. Sorry, I jumped in there. Yeah, so Threefold Educational Foundation and School was established in 1926, and we're just 20 miles from the island of Manhattan. So, in 1926, this was just like very rural,
Yeah.
and they bought the place. But now, we're in a suburb of New York City, but we're on 220 acres together with the fellowship community, which is just next door, which is an anthroposophical community and does a lot of their main focus is elder care. So they have independent living and then end of life care. And the farm operates on both foundations land. But yeah, so threefold, there's about a dozen or so initiatives here. Adult artistic trainings, there's two Waldorf schools for, neuroatypical and neurodiverse individual, young adults, K through 12. Gosh, there's many things. There's a cafe, there's a co-op. They put on a lot of theater here, and yeah.
Yeah.
Of course,
It's
the
just
farm, as you mentioned. Yeah.
it's an important place in the map of such things, right? And it's yeah, many people have passed through there, and it's just to do a residency like you're talking about, like there's a lot of interesting people to talk to.
Yeah, exactly. A big part of the residency is what is spiritual community, again, and everything has to be renewed right now. We're in a process of renewal kind of everywhere. And also, what happens when something's 100 years old, nearly 100 years old, and how does that breathe? How is that open to change? How do we look at the origins of its creation story and kind of draw on those powers and those intentions and those forces? And then, of course, I mean, in the anthroposophical movement, but in many movements, as we're kind of working with these generational shifts of boomers to et cetera, what is succession? What is succession, and how do we create a place for young people when the kind of societal forms have become ossified to a degree that so many people cannot find their way into these forms? So how do we create new forms? How do we create new forms that are really capable of hosting the future, but and then at the same time of protecting the legacy and the archive of the past. So it's a really kind of light and dark kind of how do we enter the underworld of the unknown experience, and that there's always going to be a risk with that. Of course, we don't want to destroy something that we cannot create, but there has to be something of going into something new. And so I'm really hoping to kind of bring that impulse to the community and support young people to be here, because it's like, we have the oldest Congress, we had the two oldest presidents running, and very much in the Anthroposophical Society, we're a reflection of that greater trend as well, where there is quite an elderly population. So how do we renew this and yeah, create kind of a continuity of creation through a kind of successionary process where we can find that together.
Yeah. So deep legacy there. You were starting to share the three kind of
Oh
three
yeah.
pillars of this collab.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so for me, yeah, so study is an important aspect, like anthroposophical text, but also that we kind of experiment in many different ways. So like co-learning and really through conversation, like the text is actually something to be in community with. It's not something to get through. Actually, sometimes the less we get through, the better, you know? And it's so difficult with it. I mean, it's not difficult, but it's one aspect of anthroposophy is that we have, Rudolf Steiner was so prolific that there's so much in print that it can get very lost, the studies in the content, the vast amount of content. But to really focus instead again on that kind of spiritual activity of knowing and what we can develop as a thought together. Not so that we can encompass all of the knowledge in the world, but so that we can find what actually needs to be known right now amongst us. So yeah, co-learning, but also bringing in experienced faculty and educators. And in the Northeast, we have such kind of a rich, kind of array of them. Because really of its connection to Europe and that kind of proximity there. And so there's a lot of anthroposophical institutions around here to work with. And then it, and the study also covers everything from epistemology, what is participatory science, what is meditation and inner work exercises, but also heavily in the arts. So what is eurythmy, this new movement art? What is speech? Like what is in the formation of speech actually is an inner act, and yeah, hands-on with painting and sculpture and different things, and then
So that's all in the realm of study.
yeah, that's study, yeah,
Okay,
yeah,
great.
yeah, kind of this mix of co-learning and kind of respecting elders or those who know more at this point, yeah. So that's study, and then an initiative I would say is the next pillar, and that's really kind of a heart of the program, and it's both. The residence initiative, as well as the initiative that we can offer towards them of taking together as a team. So for example, like we have one resident who'll be coming and he's been studying astrology for many years. And then now he's interested in anthroposophy. And so there's this thing called astrosophy, which brings those two together, of which I personally know very little about. But it'll be, there's very many mentors around here for that. And so we're going to support him in his inner. Research, personal research going in in that way in the inner field, but then also it has to come out as well. So it could be just a weekend conversation of 12 people who also have interest in this. The other thing is threefold is a conference venue. So we could host a conference. I mean, there could be a conference of 100 people or more here, in that realm. And so that's another kind of aspect of the initiative that he could take on. And then it really has both of that. I mean, it could be a small community sharing and it could be creating a movement around his interest. But then the other aspect is that we're a youth section of the School of Spiritual Science, which is like kind of the youth department in the University of Anthroposophy, we could say, which is a kind of global network. And so we're doing some of that work and carrying some of that work as a team. And so that's some of what we bring to the residents is we have ongoing conferences and events and just communications work and fundraising that we do on behalf of that youth section team, mostly in North America, but we do, participate globally to a lesser degree. And so it'll also be kind of being like, hey, here's some initiative that we're carrying as a house, as a team. Can you help us with this? So that's kind of the initiative aspect. And then also just to say, so that could be it could be spiritual initiative, it could be scientific, it could be artistic, it could be a play that you put on and tour, and maybe you need artistic support with that, but maybe actually you don't need artistic, maybe you're actually good with your art aspect. You actually need help kind of landing it and doing logistics. And
For
so
sure.
there's all these kind of flexibilities in how the program can support an individual. But then, so the third would be service. And that's this aspect which, Thoreau College and the micro college movement seems like at large is so aware of, is that there's something that, young adults don't need to just sit inside in classrooms. And I've experienced that, through my time is that we really need I mean anybody, but it applies a lot to young adults. Like we need something of an ex of experience within ourselves for the other concepts to land. Because if there's kind of no reflective capacity, if there's no kind of hall of mirrors within the individual, these things can just pass through because there's not any bouncing walls. So anyways, that was kind of a really big thing that I noted and that I valued so much, was really also developing this love of learning through experience and, all the self-knowledge that is required of that, of how to tell someone they didn't do something right or that they weren't on time or that, just all these things that are involved with having colleagues and actually accomplishing things together. So of course, as we've talked about threefold, there's a lot to do here. There's a lot to get plugged in with, everything from our artisan workshops to, elder care to landscaping, farming. There's kind of a hostel here, which rooms need cleaning. There's walls need painting. There's all kinds of, there's no lack of kind of service opportunities. And that will also be, in a certain sense, an economic or financial aspect of the program, is that, maybe you're working for the farm and then the whole house gets food through it in trade. Or maybe, it's kind of, you're painting a house that's owned by the foundation, and that comes back as rent forgiveness for the house. So that's kind of also our financial drive, as well, of kind of working in the world. So those are the kind of three main pillars.
Yeah, that's beautiful. How many people are you imagining doing this at a time, or like what's is there a picture of what you'd like to see in terms of the who is participating in this?
Yeah, I mean, so we're really. So one aspect that we're working with right now is we're in a house that needs a lot of renovation. This is actually an interesting thing to bring in terms of alternative economics, is Threefold has a deep history with this. They actually had, I think, one of the first local currencies. It was back in the 30s. It only, was around for maybe 4 years, but it was an interesting experiment. Another thing they experimented with was they had, in the 40s, 30s, 50s, they had this deal where they said anyone can come. You can build, you don't have to be an anthroposophist, we're not gonna like verify that. You can build your own house on your own dollar. You own the house. You can pass it down to your children, but we own the land. And so yeah, this is interesting. So this was how meant there's 35, 40 houses here, and that's how many of them were built. Actually, I think most of them were built under that agreement. And then what happened was, maybe they were passed down, but this was actually the last house to be given back to the foundation by the family. And so anyways, it needs some work. So we're doing a lot of renovations on it, and that'll actually become part of the program in a sense. Part of the service work as well will be that and integrating art into it. But yeah, so the house isn't huge. We have room for four residents, but then we also, there's 35, 40 houses plus a dormitory here on site, within walking distance. So we're kind of looking at those options as well.
So there's room for some growth if that turns out. Yeah.
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah, and so you mentioned, this should be this is an opportunity for someone, who is wanting to go more deeply into anthroposophy. On the study component there. Are there other qualities of a person who would be really great for this?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite independent. So it's not. It depends on the individual. Age isn't, isn't always the main factor, but there is a level of independence and self-starting and self-drive. I always think in my mind, like, if we go off on the wrong edge of the polarity, you come in and it's just a bunch of 20-somethings on their cell phones. That's kind of like the wrong. But yeah, to really allow for their own initiative and volition, and really to not necessarily hold people's hands. And because of the size, the number of residents which we really have capacity for in the initial phases, it will be quite independent. It doesn't necessarily pay, for a program director to be with people all the time. And but that's really kind of inherent in the pedagogical approach which we're trying to develop, is like, this is your time. This is your time. And I'm trying to give you enough guidance and support and mentorship, or find that for you, which you can jump off where you're trying to go, but not too much. I'm not holding anyone's hand. So I think maybe that paints a little bit of a picture.
Yeah, so that raises some really fascinating questions for me that I spend a lot of time, thinking about. Because I mean, Rudolf Steiner, every Waldorf school in the world has somewhere on their website this quote about, our highest calling is to educate free human beings who are able to impart purpose and direction to their lives, right? And that is, this education for free people, right? Who can make use of this space that you're talking about, this opportunity for initiative and for an openness. And I think that that is, so what I think about is what do you need to do, or as an educator of high school students, or maybe college age students, like we're working at, like what are the conditions that allow a person to be ready to really make the most of an experience like the one you're talking about? And I think, I mean, your story about, going off on the road and figuring out how to navigate, through a foreign country and find your interests is a great example of that. But if you were to design a program that had that, like, I guess that's what I think of what we're trying to do here, really, is sometimes people aren't quite ready for that level of openness right out the bat, especially right out of high school.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it might not be ideal for everyone right out of high school. And I think that's fine. And I
Especially
think,
with the phone, right? As you're saying, that's exactly, you can imagine,
yeah.
what happened in many contexts, because it is like that our technological crutches are so strong that we fall back onto that when we're like, I don't know what's happening right now. What do I do? And that's a that we real effort needs to be taken on to not have that happen.
Well, I want to, frame something that for me feels important is that it's not like this freedom thing, as the way I conceive of it, it's not about not doing what others say. It's not about being free from. It's not actually about separation. It's actually about doing what I love to do. That could be exactly what the elders are saying. It could be, but it's about love for the act of doing it, not because of any shoulds, including the environment, including any shoulds. It has to be just for the love of doing it. And really, when we're doing that, when I'm doing something for the love of doing it, it's because it's my unique contribution to the world, which I've incarnated to give. So it's really about actually being connected or like a vehicle with the spiritual world. So there's not a lot of confines we can put on it in that sense. If it means everyone running around in whatever direction they want, it's like it's not about a want space. But yeah, anyway, I just kind of wanted to share that because it is, when so Rudolf Steiner, one of his seminal books, right, is The Philosophy of Freedom. But when he had it translated into English, he said, "Oh no, the Americans, they need the philosophy of spiritual activity." Anyway, I was like an interesting because it's a spiritual activity, And so how do we get people to step into their own spiritual activity is really kind of maybe for us a better question in a certain way.
Absolutely. I mean, what I understand you're describing, you're working to create there is not a space that has a really, like, there's not a circle of elders who are telling you what to do, right? You do need to do what you're passionate about, you need to actually, like, find that your calling, right, as it were. And that's a that's assuming some development in self-knowledge and in the practice of trying things out, and then reflecting on that kind of an iterative practice that I think your biography, you describe doing that, I think, in a way, right? And that's you, and many people, ultimately do that themselves, and maybe that is the path of our times,
Well, I think there's something there too of, I mean, that's where the kind of work of the team comes into is like, there's just things like, oh, there's a conference there. Maybe I personally don't have enough time for it, or I don't feel connected to it because of the individuals or whatever that maybe, it's not my interest, but maybe it's really important and I could hand that off to you and I could mentor you in that. So there is kind of a certain amount of work which is already here, which needs to be done. And maybe through that process, one can find their own. So I think there is some space for that as well. There's some space for that as well.
Yeah, something that that really resonates with your describing is also, we live, like, in our town here in Viroqua, there are all of these talented people, artists and farmers and educators and business people and people doing activism. And some of them are kind of conscious of being teachers, but many of them are not, but they have things that they're excited about and they would like to share. And so I definitely see that one of the things that I do is facilitate these connections and relationships between our Thoreau College students and fellows and their the people that they can connect with here in this community or beyond. And that also requires some support of the other people, right? Of the mentors or these kind of emergent teachers. And some of those people really get into it, right? Then it becomes an important part of their identity, but all of them are require a little bit of support there. And I wonder if you've thought about that. I mean, you're in a community that's organized around education in a way, but that is also like, is what are the expectations of these residents that, if you're going to come in and be involved with my conference or my like farm or whatever.
Well, I mean, I think, in terms of creating this course that we're just finishing out that we've been doing for the last 9 months, that was a huge aspect of it is finding the people with which to work with. And a lot of that, like you're saying, actually, sometimes the best people are the people who actually haven't been asked yet. But they have something. And you're like, you're ready for this. So it's like almost like you have to mentor your faculty sometimes and see them for who they are. And I think, what's really important for me too is that to develop a program in which I don't resonate actually with everything that's happening. And that's a big part of what I'm trying to do with conferences too, is to work. Like I can see that there's like, for example, with astrosophy, I'm not, this was just like this astrology mixed with anthroposophy. It's not my personal interest, but I see the value in it. I don't want to hear about it for too long, but like I see the value. So I see the value in it. And so can I see that value in it and know that what I'm interested in actually is not for everybody either? And so how can we create a curriculum diverse enough where everyone's getting their needs met, even though no one's getting their needs met necessarily at the same time? And that really is developing this capacity within myself, which can go beyond like and dislike, right? But can kind of see beyond that. And I think that's so important because we do have, I mean, it's also important too that we do have many programs which are just kind of one school, of one feel, and they find the students and find the faculty of that. But I think a lot of the future task is actually working with the people whom I do not like because it develops the love. I mean, there's the only way to get through that is to develop the love. So, yeah.
I think that's true in this our moment, the impacts of the new technology on education are, increasingly like dramatic. And one of the things that you see is that information, simple like facts and statistics and like narratives are very easily accessible for free all over right now. If you wanted to find out what happened during the 30 Years' War, like what the composition of ammonia is or whatever, like you can find that right now. And also even doing things, right? In practical knowledge, the folk school classes that we do here, people often come, I watched a YouTube video about that and I tried it out and like I kind of did it. And there's a way that if you wanted to fix a an engine or learn how to make pickles or something like that, that knowledge is also available and you can practice it and do it. But so that leaves what's really missing, I think, in education, and we I think have a unique opportunity to provide is the social context, right? Of building and supporting an active community life, of working through relationships with people that you may personally find difficult, right? Different perspectives and worldviews and communication styles and habits and things like that. So as an educator, I find myself, thinking more and more about that. How do we prepare people to be in relationship to each other and to be in community to get together?
Yeah, I mean, I loved it so much. I've been involved with Waldorf schools to these different degrees, but in our Waldorf course that we just had as part of our program, it was so great because the teacher brought this picture so clearly of, maybe with a middle school class, I'll have a week on the Civil War. And it's like, I'm not giving them the information. Anyone can go get the information. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to tell them like the life of Frederick Douglass over the week, just so they can actually feel something of the time, and it can spark kind of an interest maybe they want to go deeper, or they know something of it on a kind of level of inner feeling. Or it's not, it's like a knowing, really, isn't it? So I think that's for me interesting, with anthroposophy as well, or inner development is, I mean, no one can give it to you. In a sense, an anthroposophical course, nobody can give it to you. You have to show it, you have to give it to yourself. And that's an essential aspect of kind of that the mystery centers, are no longer centralized in this way. We've gone from heliocentric to geocentric, where it's all within our own centers. And it's up to us as free individuals to kind of activate that and do the work and give it to ourselves. So there's kind of this interesting thing, right? It's like you try to create a course which can't actually be a course. And so that conversation between, I think this is something I was hearing in what you're saying too, is this conversation between process and form, and kind of acknowledging that something new has to come into today. But the form has to follow, I think, the process, or we could say the inner transformation of the individual and the community. That has to lead, right? And then the forms will follow. We don't need, like, we already actually have, we know how to kind of like, we know how to heal the earth, like we know on this certain level the aspects of how to like logistically heal the earth. It's actually quite accessible. But what we're missing is to come to an agreement between individuals that's something that we would choose to do. And there's a certain kind of, so there's a conversation that needs to be had, and there's a certain inner transformation or process which we have to come to as a community, to kind of, yeah, and the form will happen after, So, yeah.
That's quite profound. I think it is, that the information is there, the skills are there, but we it is, our communications, our relationships, our agreements, and our will, right? That's really, the task. I think what you're describing, the vision for this collab, right? It points to the importance, the centrality of whether we like it or not. And it is very uncomfortable. Often we live, in our era as individuals, right? Even if you are going to join a community that lives, if you're an Amish person or living like you're an Amish person, or you join a religious order, you are, you're joining the military, whatever. It's something that is a submerging individuality. You're still making a choice to do that. That is a, in a way, the challenge, the opportunity, and the kind of burden of our time. And so education needs to respond to that in a way. And it seems like that's being recognized in a program that has, so much scope for individual initiative, right? There that has you provide the resources and the people and the context, but it is something needs to come from the individual participant to make it really happen.
Yeah, and I think there's this aspect of, network and global, national, whatever, continental kind of connection of network and reach and scope, which is interesting to really feel like I'm holding something, that's beyond just this place, but then also to be super local and like, a lot of our work might be painting these houses so they look better, or like working on the festivals. And how can we kind of actually really work into this community in this place? And really, I mean, it'd really be an incubator for new ideas and new connections and yeah, a new level of kind of community dialogue. And I'm really curious, people need a door in. Like I feel like a one thing that I've experienced from your alumni is it's actually, as well as this, program, it's actually a door into the community of Viroqua. So many people have come to know Viroqua and love Viroqua and have this connection, even if they don't live there full time anymore. And so that's kind of an aspect of that here too. Even if you don't live here forever, but there's a connection that's happening, and because we need people to carry us forward.
Absolutely. Well, that I think is a beautiful place to conclude. I think, we're part of this network and this growing kind of exploration. I think really excited to know about what you're working on there, and to be able to tell our alums about it. And hope to come visit someday.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and I you probably put it in the notes or something, but people can go to threefold.org/youth if they want
Slash
to
youth.
sign
Right.
up.
We definitely will do that. Thank you so much for sharing, Ezra. Thank you for your work. Good luck with everything to come.
Yeah, thank you for hosting this conversation and